Herbert Abraham. Okay, one of the questions that an outsider I've had is, how'd the Lebanese end up here?
How did they end up here? Well, originally, Joe Abraham was the founding Lebanese settler of this community. He had a brother named Yusuf Abraham and Ed Abraham. Ed Abraham was a well-known merchant, had one of the largest stores in Bristol. And many, many years during the Depression, he accumulated probably $100,000 in outstanding accounts that his various customers owed to him. He was known as the poor man's friend, and he never turned a man down, regardless of the man's financial standing, through needed groceries. So Ed, during the Depression days, as all others, went through a period when people could not pay their debts. They did not pay him, and he in turn could not pay many of the people who he purchased goods from, that the bills were not to be paid until later in the fall after the crops were made. So Ed went out of business, and Yusuf Abraham was here and was also in business, in the oil business. He later went back to Lebanon. But the question as to how the Lebanese got started, Joe Abraham.
Joe was the first.
Yes.
How did he end up in Bristow?
Well, he first settled in Oklahoma long before statehood. He was not a Sooner, he was a Boomer. A Boomer was a fellow that was for statehood, and some of the rest of them didn't want statehood. His dad did want Oklahoma to become a state and was active with some of the early settlers. And the first governor of Oklahoma, Governor Williams, I believe.
Was it Haskell?
Was it Haskell or Williams?
So. You know more about that?
I'm not sure who it was. But anyway, these fellows from Oklahoma City who were active in Oklahoma politics would come to Bristow, and they always called on Joe Abraham. He was active in making Oklahoma a state, and he settled in Chandler to start with, and was there, I believe, married in Chandler, and then came to Bristow and was married to Fanny Abraham, who came from Lone Jack, Missouri.
What business was he in?
Who's that? Joe?
Joe, yeah.
Joe was in the cotton business. He had a cotton oil mill, made cottonseed cake, had seven gins.
I mean, when he came to Bristow.
Oh, when he first came to Bristow.
Yeah.
He was a peddler. He came, when he first landed in New York City, he, of course, was not married. And just had enough money to pack a suitcase with various items that would be sold to people in outlying districts. And he walked as a peddler from New York City to Philadelphia. And going out of New York, he said, which way is Philadelphia? And they showed him, he said, where's the railroad track? And they showed him the railroad tracks. Said, why are you going on the railroad tracks? Says, well, he said, I can't get lost. And he said, if I get tired of walking on the ties, I'll walk on the rails. So he went from New York City by foot and came west. And as he traveled, he made friends. And he never lost a friend. He was always anxious to make a friend and had good merchandise. I bet many of the old-timers around Chandler, some of them are still there now. And they said, well, now, one thing about Joe Abraham, he had good merchandise, and he would come with his pack and stay all night at our house. And finally, he got enough money to buy a horse and a buggy. And he increased his stock of goods and was quite a trader around Chandler for two or three years. And then he came to Bristol, where he was married to Fanny Abraham, and opened a small store here in Bristol. And he grew as Bristol grew, and was instrumental in financing some of the first industries in Bristol. If you would call them industries, there was a glass plant here at one time. He opened a cigar factory here at one time and called it the Havana Tip. And he also bought the Bristol Gas Company from Claude Freeland, and I believe Frank Barnes might have been instrumental in it. And he accumulated a little money and would trade with the Indians and the local people. He invested his money in land. Land was cheap, of course. And the Indians were afraid that there wouldn't be enough white people to buy the land, and he was afraid there wouldn't be enough land for the white people. So he just bought land and accumulated 5,000 or 6,000 acres of land during his lifetime, and was instrumental in opening the refinery, Wilcox, later the Wilcox Refinery, but it was first the Continental Refinery. A man named Thevenin, who was a Frenchman, knew something about refining, and the Bristol Refinery was open, and he had a 1/4 interest in it, and later sold that interest. I think I mentioned that he opened a glass factory, and he had 3 strings of standard tools and drilled many gas wells around in the neighborhood of Bristol to supply gas to the Bristol Gas Company, which company was later sold to the another company, and then it came to the Oklahoma Natural. And, of course, his family was always instrumental in helping him along in the store as children. He would teach us how to clerk and cut salt meat and sack sugar and rice and beans and dig gas service lines all over Bristol.
When did his brothers come?
Well, Ed came, I don't know exactly how many years after Dad came, maybe 5 or 6 years, not very many years. And then Yusuf later came. And Ed married Nellie Campbell, a local native of Oklahoma. And
I don't know whether you said, when did Joe come to Bristol?
Well, he came to Bristol in about 1889, I believe, near that time. And
was there any, you know, there's some other Lebanese families settled here. Was there any connection between them and the Abrahams?
Well, yes. Joe Abraham had a sister named Esther. And Esther is a word that comes from Eastern Star from the Book of Esther out of the Bible. And my father's sisters had biblical names. One was named Hannah, a well-known biblical name. And Dad's name was Salim, which is the suffix of Jerusalem, as Salem. And Salem was the original king of king of Salem, the king of peace, was Jerusalem, was that city when the original Abraham landed in the Holy Land.
Well, now, let's see. I heard somebody told me that there was somebody else from the same village in Lebanon that it was came to Bristol.
There was a man named Bill Shibley who came later, quite later. Bill was told me that he was an orphan boy and that Dad's mother reared him. Bill was, of course, mayor of Bristol not long ago. And a man named Frank Corey was a Lebanese who was married to Joe's sister, Esther. Another man named George Joseph, the Joseph family is here now, has a boy named Paul Joseph. And Paul has a sister named Dolly Joseph. They're all Lebanese. And Yusuf Abraham had a boy named Don Abraham and also a daughter named Jeanette. And Jeanette is here now recently from Lebanon, and her husband was killed in a recent war there. And a son, I believe, was killed or injured. And she's here visiting now. And there were many other Lebanese families, Elias's.
Right.
Because Elias was here, and Saab, family named Saab.
Was there any reason that they... What about Sliman?
And yes, Sliman was here, Deep Sliman and Ella Sliman. Deep Sliman was a well-known merchant for many, many years in Bristol and has a wife here now, Mrs. Sliman. She lives here in Bristol. She has recently returned from Lebanon, where she was there. She went there to take care of her sister, who's now deceased. And then she returned here now, and there are many Sliman children. And there was another Sliman boy named George Sliman, who died early, and he had several children. Can't recall all of their names, and they're business people now in this area here now.
Change the subject a little. What are the oldest buildings still standing in Bristol, to your knowledge?
Well, the present one of the oldest would be the Rexall Drug Store. It was constructed, I believe, by Joe Abraham in 1903. And another rather old building next to it would be the Anthony Building that was constructed by Joe Abraham in 1912. And those are, 1903 is a rather old building.
Yes, yes. What about, there's a Stone Building there?
Yes.
Is that an old one?
A.H. Stone, that's an old building. Maybe it has a head marker on it, tells the date. I don't know when it was constructed, and I don't know whether A.H. Stone built that building or not.
And let's see, what about the old Episcopal Church building,
the
Christian Science?
The old Episcopal Church building on West 7th Street, I believe. That's one of the oldest buildings. One of the oldest buildings in town that still remains.
What about Joe Abraham's house?
Well, that house, the original Abraham house, was on the lot just west of the present Stone House. And that was a two-story frame house. All of the family was born there, with the exception of Pauline, and she was born in the present Stone House. I think that was constructed around 1912. I'm not sure about that date.
What about, did Joe get involved in any of the banks here?
As a stockholder, I think he might have been a small stockholder in the First State Bank at one time. I'm not sure about that. But he was not an active banker.
How did the Depression affect?
How did
the Depression affect your family?
Well, Joe Abraham died in 1927, and the Depression struck at the time when, if I may say so, that I had to take over,
right.
Which was and I had probated the estate myself, and as other people, we were land poor. We were broke. We went for 5 years without paying our taxes. Many, many people in Oklahoma went for 5 years without paying any ad valorem tax. There was a moratorium on the payment of taxes with the starting of the moratorium on the World War debts, which were settled on Germany, and Germany could not pay and did not pay. And with the moratorium on the war debt, we were heading into the Depression days. So with the closing of the banks, there just wasn't any money. We operated with script. Well, the Chamber of Commerce was our bank. Our bank was the Chamber of Commerce. We operated with script. And we were short of money. We had vacant buildings. Had no money to pay insurance, no money to pay taxes, no money to pay repairs. Nobody had very much money. Our bales of cotton lined the street at $25 a bale. You couldn't get enough money to pick the cotton out of a bale of cotton after you'd picked it and put those bands of steel around it. Cotton was cheap. Corn was 30 and 25 cents, 17 and a half cents a bushel. It was in the fields in Iowa, as everybody knows, the Depression days, if you know anything about it. It was cheap corn, and the wheat was lined up at the export points in New Orleans, and they piled it on the ground there. They couldn't even find boats to take it out, and there was so much wheat. Train loads of wheat would line up there, and they piled it on the ground. No place to put it. And hamburgers were 3 large hamburgers for a quarter. And many places, hamburgers, 5 cents a piece, a smaller hamburger. So you say, how did Depression affect us? Just like it did everybody else. We didn't have any money. We were broke.
In thinking about just your memory as a child, mainly, are there any particular things about life as a child in Bristow that stands out?
Oh, yes. We used to go to the Star Theater for 5 cents, and that was, to start with, the kids here didn't know what a picture was. We didn't know what a moving picture was at all, and most of us were afraid to even have our pictures taken. We were afraid of the little red canary or the little green canary. So we went to the picture show for 5 cents. We bought all of the popcorn we wanted for 5 cents, and we sat on the front row, all the kids. And the first 10 or 15 seats were just filled with kids. And we could buy watermelons for a nickel apiece, and ice cream cones, milkshakes, haircuts a quarter. And we, as children, we had everything we needed and a lot more. We had donkeys, rode horses. There were blacksmith shops on the corner of Fifth and Main Street by Bill Smith. He was the blacksmith with the large hands, and we'd stop there and watch the sparks fly across the floor. And it was a real honest-to-goodness town. The children went to Sunday school. There was a little church on East 9th Street, and Brother Hooker Groom was the preacher, and he was an old-style hellfire and brimstone preacher. He had us all going to the hot spot every once in a while, and so we had we were just a wonderful hometown community, and everybody was friendly, and they kept their word.
Let me just ask you, when were you born?
Oh, I was born in 1901 on December 8th.
Do you remember the Ku Klux Klan being in Bristow?
I remember when Jack Walton was governor of Oklahoma, and the Ku Klux Klan was rather rampant, and I knew some of the Klansmen in those days, and many of them were leading citizens in our community. And I was not interested enough, nor old enough to be deeply interested in the Klan's work or what it did. But I do remember the Klan, and I remember seeing Klansmen.
I didn't know whether it ever caused any ruckus.
I also remember that that one time when Joe Abraham was to build a cotton gin in Shamrock. Shamrock was a new oil town, and he received a letter from somebody. We don't know whether it was from the Ku Klux Klan or who it was from, But he did receive a letter and had me to read the letter to him. He could not read, but he could write his name, Freddie's name. So Dad, on the front porch of the old stone house, handed me the letter and asked me to read it. I read it, and it said that you got to discontinue building the cotton gin in Shamrock, that we don't need a gin in this community, and if you do, why, something will happen. Well, I don't recall exactly what the words were, but I do know that Dad was very much concerned over that letter. I don't know whether that was a Ku Klux Klan's letter or not. I don't think it was. I think it was somebody who did not want the gin constructed over there because of competitive reasons, because of a gin that located probably over in Cushing.
What effect did the oil, was the oil boom the biggest boom to hit?
Oh, yes. The oil boom definitely was the biggest boom that ever hit this town.
What kind of effect did it have that you just remember?
To start with, there were no paved streets in Bristow. And they didn't have large trucks in those days when the boom first started. And the mud was over ankle deep. And you were even walking across the street. We didn't know what jaywalking was. We just walked. And the parked cars in the middle of the street. And there were all kinds of teamsters. They had wonderful horses and they would haul most of the oil field equipment, the pipe and the tanks and the tools were hauled by horses. Am Fryson, a well-known citizen, now deceased, was one of the early truckers in this community. And he did well in trucking, later became an oil man, and his family now has oil. But the oil boom definitely was paramount in Bristow's history. It started with the discovery of some shallow wells in the Layton Sand, and later found some production in the Jones Sand, and later Bartlesville, and deeper down to the Dutcher, and then Wilcox Sand. And there have been a few Arbuckle tests made in around Bristow, but very few here over and around the Drumright area. There's been some Arbuckle production, but the field spread from primarily it hit around Drumright and Shamrock in that area big first. And the Jones family here, that would be R.L. Jones and M. Jones and B.B. Jones and Boots Jones, the Jones family, which is probably the best-known family in Bristow. They owned a large interest in the Mid-Continent field over around Drumright, and later liquidated their interests, and they were settled here in Bristow. But the refinery was the result of oil, and we have a deep gas storage facility that the Oklahoma Natural Gas Company has now and maintains south of Depew, stores gas in the summer. Of course, we use it in the winter. And there's many, many structures still around Bristow that are being drilled today.
What did you do as a kid, teenager? What was the typical, what did you do for fun? What kind of life did you lead, Kind of thing that...
Well, we first... we
kind of thing you wouldn't want to tell your kids about.
Well, We did a lot of things in those days that a lot of kids do now. We had horses. Some of us started out with jennies. We started out just like other kids. We had skates and later a tricycle and later a bicycle and later came the automobile and we had horses and skating rinks. We did everything that all the kids do today and a lot more, too. We played Go Sheepy Go, and sometimes we'd go and didn't come back.
I was thinking, somebody told me about some bootlegger that used to live here. Was bootlegging a...
Oh, bootlegging was next to the oil industry, was the biggest industry in town. Bootlegging was... A way that many, many families, families I'm speaking now, and some of their children, the children of the old-time bootleggers. I don't know whether I should mention any names or not, but we had some bootleggers that were considered probably among some of the best-liked citizens. I started to say best-respected, but they were respected bootleggers. Some of them took more preachers fishing than anybody else in town. They were, and these, some of the bootleggers didn't drink. They followed it as a business and paid the federal tax. And the state officers and the county officers didn't do too much towards stopping them, because if they knew anything about it, they didn't try to stop it.
Have there been any famous old crimes or trials or scandals or anything that made the newspapers or something in Bristow? I know you had your share of run-of-the-mill assault and battery and that kind of thing, but have there been any famous events?
I don't recall. There used to be some bank robbers around here. Brennan was one, and pretty boy Floyd used to come through town. I've seen him standing in the highway down here, and there's probably others that I would remember if their names were suggested. Bristow was not a hideout, but there were some well-known, I would say, criminals who passed through here and stayed here at times.
During the oil boom, I have heard there were, there was a dance hall or something back of a drugstore. I was thinking when the oil boom came, you had oil field workers who were just here to work and spend their money and have fun, right?
Well, there was an old place we called the Palm Confectionery that at one time was operated by, I believe, called him, his name was Ralph Corey, he's now deceased, Punk Corey. He was a great baseball player in our estimation, and that I might mention that Bristow had some outstanding baseball players, Hammond Vickers and Punk Corey and Smoots Jones, and many of those fellows were considered just top-notch baseball players, and we had a baseball team that was a top-notch team, and we'd go to baseball games on Sunday. And this drugstore, what you mentioned, where they would dance, they used to dance down in the Palm Confectionery some, and there was another drugstore where they used to dance up here on North Main Street near the City Hall. There was a dance hall back there at one time. I don't recall too much about those dance halls.
Yeah. What about politics? Been any interesting politics in Bristow? Maybe, I know they have the elections all the time, but any of them real hotly contested?
Well, as I recall, at one time, Bristow was the streets filled with political groups, and the question was, well, where were we going to have the county seat? Would it be in Bristow or Sepulpa? So there was a real hot election, and of course Sepulpa won, but Bristow was in the big middle of that, and we of course won the county seat here. And Bill Cheatham at one time was a candidate for Congress here, and Judge C.O. Beaver, both of whom were Democrats, he was a candidate at one time for Congress, and I believe that Ed Mackinson, the present editor of the Bristow paper, was a candidate for Congress.
Well, just let your memory run. What are some of the things that you remember about Bristow that maybe nobody else knows, or kind of thing that stand out in your mind about life in Bristow?
Well, as I recall it, on Saturday, you could walk up Main Street and see nearly all of the farmers that live within trading area of Bristow. And I knew most of the farmers because I had laid cotton at the cotton gins for Dad, and also we had a number of farms, and just my business to know them. And I knew the farmers, and we would visit and stop and take out time to talk. And there was a lot of sociability among the people in those days. And many of the Indians would come to town, the Big Ponds and the Tigers, and many others would come in, and some of them would get rather drunk. And there was a jail that we had to build them out of cement and put some steel bars on it. And I don't know whether the jail house is still here or not. It was down in the area where Wells' grocery store is now. May have been torn down. And those Indians would get in there and they'd hoot. We saw all kinds of Indian regalia in the early days. Drive out on the country roads, and the trees were rather large and more or less independent. There was not a lot of running blackjack. In the early days, the grass, blue stem, big blue stem, little blue stem, and various prairie grasses would grow and get rather tall. And when the fires came through, well, the fires were hot enough to kill out the undergrowth under those trees, which is there now. A lot of the areas that you see that are completely covered with a dense blackjack growth and other kinds of trees there. To start with, that was not that way. The cause of the blackjack growth and the running blackjacks and so forth was overgrazing. Many of the farms would have a pasture, and there just wasn't enough grass. Farms were small, and the tenants would overgraze. And with the overgrazing, we didn't have the fires. No fires, then the acorns would fall and sprout. And the fires kept down this tremendous growth in the early days. But we've got a growth now that we have to brush beat.
Has cattle been important in Bristow's economy?
Cattle probably today is one of the big industries of this community. You can believe it or not, but within 2 miles of Bristow, I can show you an 80-acre tract of ground that now has, believe it, 200 head of cattle. And the man who has the cattle paid over $2,000 rent. He doesn't. Now, I can show this to you, as seeing is believing. And the grass that are being grown there, and it would be fescue, sarissa, and big and little yellow hawk, of course, native Bermuda grass, and the other native grasses, and Korean lespedes. When one crop is grazed down, another one comes on. And then there's some cheat grass, some what we call wild oats here. It's unbelievable as to what the carrying capacity of this land for grazing purposes, if we have enough rainfall. And with proper tillage, deep tillage, we can catch the rain through the season and retain that rain. And that is being done by the ranchers out here today.
Well, is this something fairly new?
This is fairly new. This is as brand new as it can be. And there isn't any question about it. The future for this area is absolutely fabulous.
Well, now, am I correct? Bristow started out with cotton as its main
crop. That's probably correct.
somewhere in there, peanuts got imported.
Later, they came with peanuts, and men tried to, after the peanuts sapped the soil, they tried to put on a cover crop, but very few people did that. And excess of fertilization was used. That shoots the soil and allows the plant to extract from the soil the native fruit values and nutrients faster than should be done. But grazing is quite different. And the peanut was taken out, the whole plant was taken out, and no humus was left in the soil. But today, with grazing and fertilization and proper cultivation, we have a deeper root system, so we've got humus in the soil. Humus is the item that holds the water. And then the extra growth on top of the soil keeps the soil cool, and the sun doesn't extract by capillary attraction the water that we can catch. So you can go out here today and find just dozens of farms. I can take you to dozens of farms that are carrying cattle today, and with the price of cows, you can get well over $500 for a nice, good-sized cow, and some of them up to $650 just for the cow, and many times $750 for cow and calf. Depends, of course, on the size, but you can go out here and just see these little small herds that are in the making. You can see that the future of this area is agriculture, it's industry. We have new industries around our town now. We have the lock plant that's here, and prefabricated house materials are being manufactured near Bristol. We have... The future of this community is absolutely settled. We have homes being constructed out here by the dozens that are equal to homes anywhere in the country. And these people have good jobs, and they're competent. They know how to do things, and they are doing things. They're working everywhere. And they're independent, free-thinking people. It's different from the original tenant farmer who followed the oil boom communities. Quite different. The first farmer was an itinerant, and he was a worker, and he worked some in the oil fields, maybe pump a little, do this and do that. But today, most of these people who are settled around Bristol live in houses that are just far superior to the houses in Bristol. It would make the houses of Bristol look shabby to go out and see these wonderful new fabulous homes that surround this community.
Change the subject again. Was there a black community here all along?
Oh, yes. We had Lincoln Heights, which was on the, up by the standpipe on the west side of town. And that was the original colored community. And we had some wonderful colored citizens in this area. We still have them. And the colored community later was moved to the east side of Bristol. And we call it the east side now, on East 12th Street and East 11th Street. And there are many old original families that are still here. And they're...
Who are part, some, too, by name?
Well, the Wilson would be an original family, and... The man that was janitor up at school for so long, he was ill here a while back, Shoals. And then there's another colored family that I'm having a little difficulty in calling his name, but he worked for Joe Abraham as one of Joe Abraham's cotton samplers. He cut sample and worked with Dad. And Willis. We call him, his first name is Willis. I can't call his last name now. I may think of it in a minute. And then Worth Sanders is one of the earliest farmers here. And Jake Roberts was a family. The Roberts lived up north of town up here. They still live in this area, some Roberts. And then Combs, Roland Combs, had a son that teaches school. He was lived out around Slick, would come to town. He has a daughter who's a school teacher. And Chuck Farmer and Alfonso Farmer family, and any number of them. They're still around here.
What about Indians? Did Indians, full bloods, I suppose, live in Bristow, or do they stay out from town?
Very few Indians lived in Bristow. A few, Jake Clinton, lived here at one time, and then there was a member of the Tiger family that lived here, and not too many Indians lived in the city of Bristow.
Was there prejudice or discrimination against Indians?
Never has there been any prejudice or discrimination against an Indian, nor a Negro in this community. I know any other nationality. Never have I known of any prejudice.
What about the school system here? Has it been adequate all along compared to
other
schools?
Yes, we've had a wonderful school system, and I believe we've got the best school system today that we've ever had. We have a superintendent who's active, he's forward-thinking, he's bought us a brand new school system, and they've got a wonderful new school building here, two of them. And primarily, I think we can give him credit for that. We have an outstanding school system.
Well, you and your brother and sisters all went to school here.
Yes, we all went to school here.
And you have good memories of it.
Oh, yes.
For all.
Oh, yes. Bristow has always had a top grade school.
Well, let me think. What? I'm